the O, and the Dub. Welcome to Junior, the CHL podcast with Jeff Marek and Sam Cosentino. From now until the MasterCard Memorial Cup, this is the destination for news, opinion, and prospects. No one does the CHL like this.
Welcome once again to Junior, your favorite CHL podcast. I'm Jeff Marek, joined as always. I shouldn't say as always, because I took a week and you took a week. Our man Sam Cosentino. Yeah. Good to be talking to you again, Sammy. How are you?
Well, you know what, Jeff? I'm doing well, and selfishly, I just want to take a moment. I was unable to participate last week. I know Todd fell in, and I appreciate that. But just wanted to say thanks to the listeners, to the hockey world in general that supported my family through what was a difficult week last week. We got a pretty big medical scare with our son. Mm-hmm. We're back at home, and he's doing well now. So thanks to everyone, the calls, texts, emails, the support was fantastic, and nice to kind of find some normalcy and get back to work and be on the show here with you again, Jeff.
A quick little follow-up to that as well. I mean, you're such an outstanding dad. Have you, because I know when the scare was going on, you didn't sleep at all. Have you been able to catch up on your sleep, Sammy?
Well, we got one good one in last night, and hoping for a couple of more here upcoming to kind of get back to normal. So, yeah, sleeping and kind of a day bed in the hospital room for six straight nights. It wasn't conducive to sleeping mixed in with all the worry, that's for sure. But we're on the right path now, yep. So things are looking up.
That's great news. And as always, you know, all through all of it, our thoughts were with you the entire way and continue to be so. About last week, just when you think Connor McDavid can't take his game to another level, he takes his game to another level. They knock off the Erie Otters, that is, knock off the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds in six games. We're going to get to the Western Hockey League final here in a couple of seconds. We'll deal with the queue later on in the podcast. But quick thought before we get to Oshawa, specifically as they knock off North Bay, your thoughts on what Erie was able to do to the top team in the CHL, the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds?
Well, you know, McDavid really carried them through the first three and a half games, and then Nick Baptiste started to come on. You know, Strome has put up some good points now, but I think the thing that impressed me most about Erie, and leaving McDavid out of it because he was on another planet, like, forget about it, this guy's he's unbelievable. But the commitment to team defense, when you look at guys backtracking, yeah. You look at them collapsing in front of Devin Williams, you look at all the block shots, you look at some of the simplicities in their game just to, you know, get pucks in, get pucks out sort of thing. And that's really what allowed McDavid to go out and do his thing, because they were never really in any great deficits, you know, in the series, in one particular game. They never really found themselves in peril, I think, because of that. And when you play that style of game and you have the best player in the world at that age group who can go out and really do his things, that's kind of the recipe for winning. And Oshawa is going to be in tough, because the number one thing you're going to have to do to beat Erie is to stop Connor McDavid. And I just don't know if there's anyone right now in this age group on the planet that can do that.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking about that the other day. I mean, Darnell Nurse may have been the best player in the OHL to put on Connor McDavid, and he was only able to sort of neutralize Connor McDavid in game five. That was about it, and we saw a certain frustration level come out in Connor McDavid. I'm thinking to myself, who does Oshawa have? I mean, I suppose Josh Brown, the Florida prospect, could be one answer, but that's going to be a challenging one here, because as you measure off both teams against each other and who has the advantage where, it doesn't seem as if the Oshawa Generals, on paper anyhow, have anyone that can deal with Connor McDavid.
I don't think they have anyone in the back end. You know, they got Carlisle, they got Van de Sample, Josh Brown you talked about. So it's going to have to be more of a team commitment to trying to stop him. It'll be interesting to see if DJ Smith throws, you know, one of his guys, maybe like a Bradley Latour out there, just to shadow him everywhere he goes. Yeah. Because Latour's a hardworking guy who can really get under your skin. He skates well. I mean, no one skates like McDavid, so you're not going to find that guy. But on the back end, they don't have that Darnell Nurse that you can throw out there against them and allow him to play 40 and 45 minutes. You know, Pechenik was a nice complimentary player. He's not going to play in the series because of a broken arm. And Van de Sample's a wonderful skater, but he's at his best when he's providing offense. Do you really want him to try and deal with McDavid and take away what is his best skill? So they don't have that guy in the back end, Oshawa, that can match up with McDavid the way Darnell Nurse could. It's going to have to be a team commitment thing. I think Latour is going to be a guy that, you know, if he's healthy and he's skating well and everything, he might be a guy that you might see play the Esa-Tikkanen role against McDavid to try and neutralize him, because anything else that anyone else has done, it just hasn't made the cut to this point.
You know, this is going to be an interesting series. Oshawa, who for a majority of the season carried the ball as the number one team in the CHL, the Erie Otters have already knocked off a number one team on the final rankings in the CHL. And we'll hear a lot of names like McCarron. We'll hear a lot about Del Cole, Josh Brown, Mitch Van de Sample, you mentioned as well. Cole Castles, another elite player on that squad. They're big, they're strong, they're speedy, they can shoot, they can hit, and at times they have the best goaltender in the OHL in Ken Appleby. As much as we say this is going to be tough for the Oshawa Generals, it's going to be tough for the Erie Otters as well.
It is, because they're going to face a real physical challenge from Oshawa, and Oshawa's going to try and run them out of the rink. They're going to try and get their defensemen to chase pucks. They're going to try and pound their defense and get into that cycle game. And the best way to keep McDavid off, you know, the scoreboard or to contain him is to not allow him to have the puck. And if Oshawa can get down and play that ground and pound game where they're cycling and getting into the corners and using some of the guys you talked about, like Castles and Big Hunter Smith and Del Cole, and using the skill guys to kind of finish things off in the offensive zone, then they're going to have a real, you know, they're going to have a really good run throughout the course of this series. So Erie's got its handful, no question, with the physical style of play. Getting Curtis McDermott back was huge. Because all of a sudden he becomes the policeman out there, where, you know, you might have been able to take your liberties with McDavid before with some of those bigger guys. With McDermott back there, you're not going to be able to do that now. You know, another key piece for Erie is getting Kyle Pettit back. I'm not sure if and when he's going to play in the series. I'd assume we'll see him probably later in the series. But a good face-off guy, and a guy who can, you know, when it comes to puck possession and that sort of thing, he can be very helpful in that department. But this is going to be a huge challenge, because Ken Appleby's had a wonderful year. Oshawa, much like Erie, is very underrated in the back end. And we know from Del Cole on down to Castles and Smith and those other guys that they have the ability to score goals too. So it should be a fascinating series, and pretty tough for me to kind of pick a favorite in this one right now, other than Connor McDavid. That's the X factor. That is the X factor right there. And, you know, you hold him down, you might be able to do it once, but you're not going to be able to do it an entire series.
Yeah, and we've seen it before, and we've seen it in all the series so far. There are times when Connor McDavid just says, "Boys, get on my back. We're going to win this series." All right, to the Edge and Out Cup, it is the Brandon Wheat Kings, who, boy, they may be in this conversation for the MasterCard Memorial Cup for three seasons, Sam. It is the Brandon Wheat Kings facing off against the Kelowna Rockets. Kelowna, we should mention, finally gets the proverbial monkey off their back. They did get a scare, but were able to defeat the Portland Winterhawks and win the Western side of things in the Western Hockey League. Quickly, before we get to Brandon, your thoughts on the Kelowna squad?
Well, awesome win in game six. You know, I watched that game in the hospital, actually, and they went down 3-0 pretty early to Portland in that game, and had the resiliency to come back, and then it turned into a bit of a slugfest, and of the next 9 goals scored, Portland only had one of them. So to finish, you know, a really good Portland team off in that style for Kelowna against the mental blockage of a team that's beaten you out in 3 of the last 4 years. Outstanding performance by Kelowna. And, you know, in that game, Jackson Whistle was pulled after it got to 3-0. Herringer came in and allowed just 1 goal and, you know, 20-some-odd shots and played extremely well. And that's, you know, Kelowna's got that insurance policy right now, maybe as much or more so than any other team remaining to play in the MasterCard Memorial Cup when it comes to having that 1-2 guy, because Herringer has been an unbelievable guy, and you wouldn't call him an MVP, but you could say about him that Kelowna wouldn't be where they are without Herringer, especially when Whistle was out, and now having the ability in 3 or 4 occasions throughout these playoffs to come in and fill in admirably. So good on Kelowna. You know, Draisaitl looks like he's a guy who's back being interested again, much the same way as Anthony Duclair has started to become interested again in Quebec. And when your top guys are on their game and you have a really good supporting cast, then teams become very difficult to beat.
Nicked up a little bit, though. We look at Goldberg. We look at Nick Merkley as well. So the playoffs are a war of attrition, and it's taken its toll on the Kelowna Rockets. Brandon, meanwhile, I don't want to say they had an easy time against the Calgary Hitmen. It was made easier with the Jake Virtanen suspension for 3 games. But what did you make of Brandon getting through Calgary to get to the final?
Well, you know, it was expected for me. You know, I thought Calgary was a team that had an awesome second half and really, you know, on the rise, but I don't think they had the skill to match up with Brandon in terms of depth. You know, the other issue with Calgary was the goaltending that I thought was going to be a bit of a concern. You know, at the end of the day, it did become a little bit of a concern for Mark French and the Hitmen. But all told, this to me was too strong a Brandon team that over the course of a long series, I just didn't see them getting beat, especially with their health coming back and guys like, you know, Klimchuk playing well, Magali continuing to do his thing. John Quenneville has just been fantastic throughout the playoffs. Brother David playing pretty well. You know, you look at Pilon back there, Reed Gao. There's a lot of good things going on for Brandon. And then, you know, when all of those things falter, you have Jordan Paperny back there to make some good saves for you, and a guy who's really a steadying presence. I've kind of liked the consistency in his game. Not that he's always been spectacular, but he's been remarkably consistent for Brandon, and that's what you need when you have a very deep team.
Yeah, we'll talk to Morgan Klimchuk of the Brandon Wheat Kings coming up on the podcast. Also, we'll chat with Anthony Duclair of the Quebec Ramparts. In a lot of ways, Sam, when we look across the entire CHL, and the remaining six teams, there's no Cinderella team here. We have a lot of powerhouses going at it. Pretty much everybody has been in consistently or flirted with being in and then out the CHL's top 10 week in, week out. This is kind of a powerhouse final for all three leagues.
It is, Jeff. And for me, I start from the goalies out. And when I look at all of these teams, there's not that rock star goalie. I mean, Fucali has Fucali, the resume of being that. And he's played that way, you know, the last 9 or 10 games. But when you look at his at a larger body of work of what he's done in the playoffs and what he's done in the regular season the last couple of years, I think that would still leave some doubt in people's minds. I think you could say the same thing about Whistle. You know, Paperny, we talked about, has been remarkably consistent, but never really spectacular, and nor has he had to be. And so when you look at the goaltending, and you know, Devin Williams, everyone's going to question him. Appleby's never played on the stage before, had one playoff game coming into the playoffs this year. When you look at these teams that are left, Guendon and Durocher and Rimouski both have played important roles, so it's kind of like a two goaltender system there. All in all, this thing is really shaping out to be interesting from a goaltender standpoint. Then you look at the defensive corps, and you can make an argument for all of these teams, except for maybe Quebec. And oddly, Quebec's probably playing the best of any of the teams, you know, at this point in the season, moving into each league championship. And then you look at the forward groups, and you talk about Quebec and their depth. You look at Kelowna, same thing. Dylan Dubé, you know, guys like that are really starting to come to the fore. Gage Quinney has come back, played really well there. Brandon's depth up front, when Morgan Klimchuk at times has been a third line center on that hockey club. You know, Rimouski's depth with Loiseau and DeLuca and those type of guys. They're powerhouse teams because they're tough finding deficiencies in each of the six teams that are left until, Jeff, they get matched up against three others. You know, until Quebec gets matched up with three others. That's when you're going to start to be able to break down and see how these teams match up. But as of right now, she's pretty tough to pick, that's for sure.
I know, and that's what makes it so fascinating. On Sunday, we should remind you, we have Game 3 of the QMJHL Final, the President's Cup, as Rimouski travels to Quebec City to face off against the Ramparts. Game 3 in that one. Last night, it was a 7-4 victory by Quebec. We'll get into this a little bit later on the podcast. But just some wide brush thoughts, Sammy, on what we saw last night in the opening game of the final round of the QMJHL. Quebec really taking it to Rimouski last night. And that's putting up a 7 spot against Rimouski isn't the easiest thing to do in the CHL.
Yeah, and their barn with the way Guendon had been playing coming in. Really difficult task, but the history between these two teams, they've always been rivals at some point, and it still may be the case. I don't know the depth of ownership here, but they're owned by the Tanguay family, both teams. You know, when Patrick Roy was there, it was a very intense rivalry. And then you add another layer to it in that Philippe Boucher, who's now the head coach and GM for Quebec, was once the general manager who hired Serge Beausoleil and Rimouski. So you have that element to things as well. They had a bit of a tiff earlier in the year. I know they still remain friends and talk, but all that's off now here in the championship and throughout the MasterCard Memorial Cup. So in terms of where this series you know, is going, I think you're going to see some high scoring affairs. Rimouski's not going to lay down here. They're going to be really good here in game number two, and I would expect this to be a long series, just as we've seen before. When you have two teams that are already in, mm-hmm. everyone thinks that that both teams are going to take the pedal off the metal. That's not the case, and I think that's going to ring true in this series as well.
Yeah, a lot of great hockey still on the horizon. Coming up on this podcast, we'll talk to Phil Muir. He is the head U.S. scout for the International Scouting Service. Their May rankings of top prospects for the 2015 draft have just come out. But when we return, we'll talk to Anthony DeClaire of the Ramparts and Morgan Klimchuk of the Brandon Wheat Kings.
I'm Jonathan Durant from the Tampa Bay Lightning. I play for the Halifax Mooseheads in the Major Junior League.
All right, Sam, President's Cup opened up last night. Quebec Ramparts facing off against the Rimouski Oceanic. And front and center with two goals and one assist, our next guest, Anthony DeClaire, prospect for the Arizona Coyotes and an outstanding member of this Quebec Ramparts team, who is, of course, hosting the MasterCard Memorial Cup. Anthony, thanks so much for this. How you doing?
Yeah, good. How are you?
Good. Pleasure to have you aboard. Last night was a special one. We know you guys can score, but, man, that Rimouski team specifically – the blue line, big, strong, tough, at times impenetrable. How did you manage to sneak seven by them?
It was tough. I mean, we knew that they got two outstanding goalies on the other side, and obviously a big difference. At the same time, I think we just kept things simple. You know, brought pucks to the net and stopped at the net. I think we played very physical against them and worked in our favor.
It's been quite a wild ride for you. When you look at, you know, spending some time in Manhattan and then going to play at the World Juniors to win a gold and then coming back to Quebec City. And it seemed to me, just watching you in all of those different teams, that it took a while for you to really find your stride back with the Ramparts. When do you think that kind of started to take place for you? And do you even feel that way about your game?
Yeah, I mean, it was sort of a hectic year for myself, like you said. Starting the year in NHL and going to World Juniors and coming back junior, it's a tough transition for myself. And you know, I think in playoffs I really start to pick up my game. I think you know, it's a big year for ourselves. We got a lot of pressure, obviously being that American post, but at the same time we responded pretty well as a team and for myself individually. So it's been a great ride so far.
What were some of the adjustments you had to make going from, as Sam mentioned, the NHL to the WJC to the QMJHL? What kind of adjustments to your game did you have to make?
I mean, the speed is one key factor, obviously. I mean, I saw that right away going to the training camp and then going back. You know, you're playing with you know, guys your own age, and obviously the lifestyle off the ice is much different living in New York than in Quebec City. But at the same time, like I said, it's been a great ride.
How about the trade thing? I mean, you and on a line with Max Domi throughout the course of the World Juniors, then you get traded to Arizona. Do you think that had anything to do with it? And are you looking forward to the opportunity as we look past your junior career?
Yeah, I mean, I think the trade worked well for both sides. I mean, the Rangers got you know, obviously a big piece in Keith Yandle. For myself, I think just showing that chemistry with Max Domi in the World Juniors helped with the trade. And you know what? Me and Max are pretty excited to move along together in the future.
Curious what your coach talked to you about before this series against Rimouski. You're already going to the MasterCard Memorial Cup as the host team. Some would say the motivation wouldn't be as high for both squads since you're both in. But what was the message from your head coach before the series?
I mean, we have one goal in mind right now, the President's Cup. And trust me, the motivation to win that cup is huge for both teams. I think we're well prepared and willing to do anything that it takes to win it. So even though we're both going to the Memorial Cup, we really want to have the cup.
Well, Anthony, I look now at Zach Fucale, acquired from Halifax, a teammate of yours again, winning the gold medal. Didn't start the playoffs for the Ramparts, and then quickly in the third game of the playoffs, he came in relief for Calen Booth. And what's it been like to play with Fuchs, and what have you seen in his game that's allowed him to kind of retake that number one spot and really set the course for the Ramparts?
He's a great goaltender, and I mean, he's been through it all already. You know, I think in my mind, he's been and Zach is a very confident and humble young man, and without him, we wouldn't be here today.
He is an outstanding netminder. We'll end on this one. I want to get your thoughts on Vladimir Kachev. Vladdy Hockey, as John Shannon on our panel likes to call him. Who's your Vladdy, according to Sam Cosentino? He's kind of become a folk hero amongst our program. What's it like with him on the ice?
It's incredible. I mean, his skill level is outstanding. And, I mean, for a small guy like that to be cruising around the ice and just dangling people, sometimes it just amazes us. And, I mean, we can see his skill level is very high. And, you know, it's pretty fun to watch him play.
He is certainly indeed fun to watch. Good luck the rest of the way against Rimouski, and we'll see you in Quebec City for the MasterCard Memorial Cup.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Yeah, Sam, you really nailed it there. It's really been an interesting year for Anthony Duclair, playing with the New York Rangers to start the season, tucked away. You know, you play game number 10, you think, that's it, I'm a bona fide NHLer, off to the WJC, and then back to the Quebec Ramparts. And you mentioned it on the podcast a couple of times, talked about it on either Friday Night Hockey or our Sunday afternoon offering, CHL style. The transition going back was challenging. And you do wonder, not so much physical, but how much of a psychological challenge that was for Duclair.
That's it, Jeff. And I'll be honest with you, you know, and I've been somewhat critical of his game because of it, just because you know how much talent he has. And so coming back, you know, to be part of the Ramparts, the organization that he's been with his entire junior career, you know, to kind of really get things going, it's almost as if to me is that he owed the organization more than what I thought he was giving. And even through the playoffs, not until, you know, the second game, not really until the Moncton series did I think he started to live up to the potential. And since then, I mean, he's been dynamite, multiple point efforts, realizing now that, hey, this thing's really only a month away from being done. My junior career is going to be done. MasterCard Memorial Cup. I have an opportunity here in the next couple of weeks to win two huge championships,
yep,
and then worry about what's going to happen in the NHL and getting reunited with Max Domi and all those sorts of things. So there's no question this guy is a key player. I mean, if he plays the way he's playing right now in the MasterCard Memorial Cup, that's going to be a huge boost for Quebec. But if he plays the way that we saw for good chunks of the year when he came back after the World Juniors, yeah, it's going to be a difficult task. I mean, I think he is the best player the Ramparts have, and he has to be their best player in order for them to have success.
He has the potential to rip up this league and rip up this tournament as well. When we come back, we will talk to Morgan Klimchuk of the Brandon Wheat Kings. They open up Friday against the Kelowna Rockets in the Western Hockey League Championship, the Ed Chynoweth Cup. Klimchuk, when Junior returns.
I'm Eric Fair of the Washington Capitals. I played for the Brandon Wheat Kings of the Western Hockey League.
Sammy joining us now is someone who will play a key role in the Western Hockey League final. He plays for the Brandon Wheat Kings, as we all know. Former Regina Pats. He is Morgan Klimchuk, also for NHL first-round draft choice. Maybe we'll get into that a little bit later on as well. Morgan Klimchuk, how are you today?
I'm doing good, thank you. How are you?
We're doing great. Thanks so much for being aboard. First of all, I know there's still unfinished business on the horizon. Kelowna awaits in the Ed Chynoweth Cup. But so far, so good for this Brandon Wheat Kings team, which is really, you know, all season long and for probably seasons to come, looking like a powerhouse in the Western Hockey League.
Yeah, things have been real well. Obviously, haven't been here all season, but since I've been here, we've done, you know, extremely well and met a lot of our expectations. But, you know, that is the truth. A lot of people are saying this team is kind of built for years to come, and, you know, we're having the success this year. So I'm definitely glad to be a part of it because I'd like to finish what hopefully is my last junior season with a ring or championship of some kind.
Been fascinating for me to watch, Morgan, because you look at this Brandon team and, you know, that great mix of youth that you talk about, veterans such as yourself, but there's been injury spread throughout the lineup, yourself included. How's the shape of the club right now here moving into this championship series against Kelowna?
It's looking good, looking really good. I think this is probably the best, from a health standpoint, we've looked all playoffs, and, you know, obviously you don't want to deal with those things, but that is kind of a testament to the team we do have is guys have gone down, and we've done equally as well with those guys out. So it's been real exciting, and, you know, going into this series where we're looking real good, and we got nothing going on.
You know, we talk a lot about, and we've talked to Kelly McCrimmon on this podcast here, Morgan. From a player's point of view, how's your coach, and how does he differ from other coaches you've had?
I absolutely love playing for Kelly, and not just Kelly, the whole coaching staff. I think David Anning and Darren Ritchie, they balance out Kelly's style very well, and, you know, they all feed off each other great. But ever since I got here, they've done a fantastic job. It's, you know, it's sometimes tough to bring new players in through trades, but they've kind of allowed me to play my style within their system, and, you know, they don't harp on things too much. They get their points across well, and you know, they're not always in your face, but they're not, you know, super laid back. So it's a great balance, and it's definitely working because everyone's really buying in and definitely enjoying their time here, not just the success, but actually coming to the rink and playing for these guys. It's been pretty special.
Morgan, as a former first rounder and as mature a guy as you are, I'm very interested to hear your thoughts on a couple of guys in your team, and we'll go one at a time. First, for the 2015 draft, here is Ivan Provorov, and then after that, Nolan Patrick, not eligible to 2017. What are your thoughts on those two guys from a player's perspective, from a first rounder's perspective?
Well, Ivan's a guy that obviously I was well aware of him before I got here, but you really got to kind of see him around the rink to appreciate, you know, how passionate he is for the game. And you know, it's tough to put a label on it, like for European players like that, but it's something that, you know, I've never seen with the Euros I've had on my teams throughout Regina and you know, playing against them in world championships and things like that. Ivan's one of the most dedicated players I've seen, and it really does translate onto the ice because, you know, day in and day out, the only thing he's worried about is being the best he can be and helping our team win, and it shows. He's mature out there. He makes the right plays. You know, he doesn't too often get excited and turn the puck over, and I think that's what NHL scouts like about him is his consistency, and you know what he's going to bring every night. He's a guy that plays on your power play, plays on your penalty kill, and plays against teams' top lines. So he's a real special player and someone that, honestly, I can say I've had the pleasure of playing with this year. And then you got Nolan Patrick, who's arguably the best young guy I've ever played with. He scored 30 goals as a 16-year-old in this league pretty easily. I think if he would have played all the games, he would have had probably closer to 40, but he's going to be a real high pick in his draft year. It doesn't take a genius to tell you that, but he's so smart. He reminds me a lot of kind of Sam Reinhart. He's always making the right play, always has good positioning, and gets his shots off well. So just like Sam, he's going to be a real high pick, but you know, it doesn't take an expert to tell you that.
Let's get back to Provorov here for a couple of seconds, because in a lot of people's mind, and mine as well, I see him as being a big riser in the draft come June in Sunrise. What's he like to play against as someone that would have, you know, when you play with Regina, would have gone up against Ivan Provorov? What is he like to go up against?
Well, he takes away your time and space real well because he skates so well and he's got such a good stick, and he uses a really long stick, so it's kind of deceptive. He kind of hides his stick and allows his skating to kind of close the gap, and then as soon as you think you have some time and space, he takes it away with, you know, what is a pretty long stick. So he's a tough guy to play against. He, you know, he's not going to run you all the time, but to actually get the puck by him and get it to the net or make a play, it's pretty tough to do.
So, Morgan, I'm looking at this Brandon team, and there's rock stars up and down the lineup. You know, two of them we've just talked about, yourself, a first-rounder in there. You know, you've got Pilon, Magaly had an unbelievable year. How is it that Kelly's been able to balance everything in terms of keeping everyone happy, not just with five-on-five ice, but with special teams ice? How has that worked out for the Wheaties this year?
Well, that just kind of speaks to the group of guys we have in here. We got a group that wants to win, and you know, we understand that there's going to be guys that are going to have to make sacrifices if the team does want to win, which we have been doing. I think it's been a little bit easier for some guys because we have been having the success that we wanted, but you know, that's exactly it. You just got guys that truly do want to buy in, and it's a cliche on championship teams, but you know, you're going to need to have those teams that have guys playing in your third line, sometimes even lower in the lineup, that are going to be pretty bona fide goal scorers and point getters that might not play as much as some of the other guys. But at the end of the day, the guys that are playing have to get the job done. And if they aren't, it makes it a lot easier because you got a lot of guys to switch in and out. So, you know, it does push the guys that play those minutes, but it is ultimately because those guys just buy in and accept their role.
You know, every team, well, most teams, I shouldn't say that, most successful teams get a scare every now and then, and it really sort of snaps them to attention. What was it like after game one of the Western Hockey League playoffs when Brandon lost to Edmonton?
It wasn't even that. I think we got scored on 9 seconds into the game or something like that. I remember sitting on the bench. I was, oh, no. But, you know, it's tough because you go into these, we went into the playoffs, we knew that we had a pretty strong team, and we kind of knew where we stacked up against a lot of these teams, and you know, you set your game plans, you get ready to go, but ultimately until the puck drops, until the fight starts, you're not really sure what to expect. So we've had a couple setbacks. All year we've kind of, whenever we lost a game, we tried to make sure that we bounce back right away for these kind of situations. So, you know, we are ready for it, but with having such a young group, I'm really impressed with the maturity we've shown when we have faced adversity in these playoffs.
It's So you got another tough opponent coming up now in the Kelowna Rockets. What do you expect from the Rockets? You know a couple of guys that are over there for sure, having played against them for a while. But what's your expectation in this series against a very good Kelowna team?
They're a team that'll obviously make you pay. They got a lot of big names over there, a lot of guys that can score from, you know, top to bottom, forwards and D. So you're a team that you kind of got to play your own. You got to worry about yourself, because you make mistakes, you turn the puck over, they will definitely make you pay. And you know, I think that's going to be it at the end of the day. We both know, you know, what each team, we know what they bring and they know what we bring. And there's a lot of guys that can score on both teams. So it's going to come down to who ends up just getting the job done and who doesn't really beat themselves.
On this, we'll let you go. I do want to ask you about the team that drafted you, the Calgary Flames. 2013 draft, 28th overall. One, take us through your draft moment when they announced your name. And two, are you watching what Calgary's doing right now and what they did last night specifically to Anaheim?
Yeah, it was obviously exciting at the time, being a Calgary kid, you know, actually hearing my name called, not just in the draft, but to my hometown team in the first round, is something that is truly a dream come true. There's not much more you can ask for on draft day. My whole family was there, and you know, I found out a couple minutes before the pick was made that I was going to go there, so I was just kind of getting myself ready. I wasn't really sure what to expect, but to actually go through the process and go up on stage and everything and receive the jersey, it was something that I'll never forget. It's definitely one of the highlights of my life so far, not just my career, so it's something that I'm very appreciative of. And then now you keep watching the team play, which in my mind is obviously one of the most exciting teams in the NHL, game in and game out, because they always leave it down to, you know, the third period or the last minute to kind of have some kind of Cinderella comeback, and it's been a pleasure to watch. They never give up. They're well coached. They work hard, and it just looks like they're having a blast doing what they're doing. And you know, it's tough because the games are always so late here, and Brandon had another late night watching the Flames play, but who can go to bed when that's going on?
Even video review can't beat them, Morgan. Listen, thanks so much for stopping by today. Best of luck to the rest of the way, starting against the Kelowna Rockets. We'll catch up soon.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Really thoughtful hockey player right there, Sam Cosentino. Morgan Klimchuk, first-round draft pick of the Calgary Flames. And he's going to be, you know, you mentioned all the rock stars. He's going to be front and center and amongst all the Magalies and the Howerlucks and the Nolan Patricks and the John Quenvilles. Of the Brandon Wheat Kings, there's a high-quality hockey player right there in Klimchuk.
Yeah, and I think the thing that Kelly McCrimmon was targeting when he went to get him is the fact that he plays the complete game, and he can play up and down your lineup. He's really, really good on the penalty kill, so he gives you those minutes as well. And so he's a really good, you hate to call a first-round pick a complimentary player, but he's complimentary in the fact that whether he's on the top line or the third line or on the penalty kill, he can do so many things for you, Jeff. And that's why I've really come to grow and like his game. And I thought he deserved a real good shot at the World Juniors this year. That's obviously something that's come and gone. But I think he's got a really solid NHL career ahead of him. And it is a cool story, as he mentioned, to be able to be drafted by your hometown team.
No, it's a wonderful one. Speaking of drafted and draft picks, we'll talk to Phil Muir from the International Scouting Service about their May rankings. No surprise, 1 and 2, Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel. What follows after may raise your eyebrows. Stay tuned.
I'm Stephen Weiss of the Detroit Red Wings, and I played for the Plymouth Whalers of the Ontario Hockey League.
Sam, the ISS top 30 for May have come out. McDavid, Eichel, Strome, Kraus, Hanifin, Marner, Provorov, Barzal, and Rantanen. And Zaka are your top 10. Joining us now is the U.S. head scout for ISS, Phil Muir. Phil, thanks for doing this. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing very well. Thanks so much for stopping by. And before we get into the specifics of the list and drafting and junior hockey and the like, describe in your words, what is ISS? Because it's more than just a list that comes out every month.
Oh, yeah. You know, ISS, I'm very excited about what's happening around ISS. It's International Scouting Services, of course. You know, we're part of a company called Hockey Tech, which was founded 2 years ago, or last year, by Stu Siegel, who's a former Florida Panthers owner. And we are part of several companies that Stu has purchased, including RinkNet. And, you know, RinkNet is the software that every team, every league, all across America and Europe use for scouting information, for inputting data, you know, for all the uses of scouting. And it's a standalone company. And with ISS, we've put in additional scouting reports which the Canadian Hockey League, the USHL, NCAA, and the NHL have access to as well. And, you know, we're also proud that we've purchased Fast Hockey in the last couple of weeks, a recent addition. And, you know, Fast Hockey is the leading amateur hockey online streaming in America. Mm-hmm. We have a company called Hockey Tech Testing. We test computerized testing for players. We have league stat. And the latest acquisition is Hockey Tech Analytics, which is going to revolutionize analytics. So very exciting time for Hockey Tech, and I'm proud to be a part of it on the scouting side and on the product development side as well.
Well, moving forward here with ISS, what we're most familiar with and what a lot of people keep their eye on are the monthly rankings. And your rankings for May were just released. Tell us how you go about getting these rankings, what kind of meetings, how many viewings would you have of players and so on. Just a little bit about the process in doing your monthly list.
Yeah, you know, we have about almost 50 scouts all across North America and Europe. We also have an internship program as well, which included about 50 scouts in itself. And, you know, everybody puts in reports, puts in rankings, and every month we review all of this, and obviously we get a computerized list and we adjust it according to, you know, we have about four or five of our scouts who contribute, maybe more, maybe seven or eight who contribute in every month in reassessing our rankings and reassessing our ratings, and we come up with one list that that is you know, known to the public. You know, there's a lot of work that goes into it, and it's subjective, but it's a result of a lot of work.
And Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel, number one and two, and they've held those spots all season long. We've made plenty about them, as I'm sure you have as well. When you look down, we'll just focus on the top 10 that I mentioned, from 3 to 10, are there one or two players in there that for you, Phil, are particularly intriguing?
Well, oh, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of good players there. There's a lot of good potential there. You know, I think the most intriguing one is the top defenseman in the draft. You know, we have him at five because mm-hmm. we feel it's kind of a forward draft this year with a lot of top end forwards. And, you know, we feel that some teams are going to jump on those forwards. However, you know, I wouldn't be surprised that, you know, Hanifin might go at three depending on the needs and what the goals are of the team who's going to pick three. So, you know, we're not in the business of, you know, making rankings because of needs. We just try to pick the best players. So, you know, Hanifin is a guy that definitely will be a top two defenseman in the National Hockey League and is worth the investment for sure.
That brings me to my next question. Oh,
yeah,
sorry, Phil.
Go ahead.
Sorry to cut you off. Yeah, but my question would be, so you'd have Provorov as your second-ranked defenseman, and you have Hanifin as your top-ranked defenseman. You have one guy who plays in the NCAA, the other guy plays in the Canadian Hockey League. How tough is it to kind of match those guys up when they're playing against entirely different competition?
Well, yeah, you know, Hanifin is 18 years old, and he's playing against men in the NCAA. And, you know, he still succeeded in getting 21 points in some, 30 games or something. But I saw a lot of him with the National Development Program in Ann Arbor because I'm stationed in Michigan. I saw a lot of him on U18s last year. And he's definitely a high-end player. He's very cerebral. He sees the ice very well. He defends well. He's got good size. He's a really good skater. You know, he has all of the attributes to be a top two defenseman in the National Hockey League. And definitely, you know, playing in the NCAA, probably not getting as many points as he would probably if he played junior hockey. So, It is a bit of a dilemma to compare the two, but you know, I was able to, and many of our scouts were able to see him play in the National Development Program. So it kind of, you know, puts a little bit of a perspective on it.
You know, Zach Werenski is another interesting prospect. You have him in at number 11. He plays defense with Michigan. As a freshman, you don't always get the minutes, but he is. Tell us a little bit about Zach Werenski.
Yeah, he got the minutes. He was on the top two pairings most of the year. Right from day one, I thought that he performed almost like a veteran with Michigan. He's very poised for his age. He's a competitive player. And for some reason, I didn't think that he played as physical in college as he did with the national program. And I think that that part of it is going to come when he comes to the pro hockey. Because he's got really good size, really good strength, really good balance on his feet. And probably doesn't have as much offense as the other two. But he does make good decisions with the puck. And I think once his physical game is back on track, which I think is there, but I don't think was so evident this year, I think he'll be a really strong NHL defenseman.
So we're going to continue on down the list here, and a guy that I find fascinating that I've watched play is the Russian player, Denis Gurianov. And always difficult, it must be, Phil, to kind of place the Russian players because of the threat of them not coming over to play in North America, so on and so forth. Do you take that into consideration at all when ranking the Russian players? And secondly, can you explain a little bit about Gurianov and why you guys think so highly of him?
Well, yeah, I mean, there is consideration when you rank a European player, and we do rank everybody on the same list. Other scouting service, like Central Scouting, they make two different lists, and they leave it up to the teams to make that difficult choice. We try and put them all in one list, and although I have not seen him personally, our scouts are really, really high on him, with good skating ability, good hands, and really good hockey sense. So, coming from Russia, sometimes there are things that are intangibles that, if you're a specific team, obviously, you dig into all of these things a little bit closer. Is he going to stay in Russia and play in the KHL? Is he going to be willing to come over here? What's he going to do? Individual teams dig in and do a lot of homework as far as that's concerned, because there is the Russian element, with the KHL. But we don't necessarily differentiate from that, and that's why we've got him in the first round as a player. We think that's where he belongs.
As a goaltender yourself, Phil, when you played in the NHL, before that you played junior hockey in both Quebec and Ontario, do we look at this draft and say it's a weak draft for goaltenders, or where are you at with the goalies in this crop?
Well, the best ones are Europeans. Our scout in Russia really likes this Samsonov. Gives him plenty of chances to be a number one goalie in the NHL. So that's why we have him as number one, and we've had other people go in and watch him in the World Juniors, and he's definitely a guy, a player that has a chance to, he's playing at a very high level over there, and we think he's got a chance to be a number one goalie in the NHL. So here in America, I think that it's a moderate draft as far as high-end skills are concerned. I think all of them really are going to need some development, and further in junior or in college, wherever they are, maybe a year or two, in the minors. But we don't see, except for the a couple of Europeans, We don't see anybody jumping in really quick and being a top-end goalie. But, you know, there are some good ones that, with some development, would have a chance.
So, Phil, I'm looking at your career as a player, then as a coach, and now you're involved with Hockey Tech, specifically ISS. I mean, how is it different, you know, performing for a team and looking for the motivation to win a Stanley Cup, either as a player or a coach, and now you're into what you're doing now in terms of scouting? Where is it that the motivation differentiates, and how is it similar in terms of working with a team?
Well, you know, you might say I've been there, done that. I've been spent 40 years in the NHL, either as a player, a coach, or a scout, as you said. And, you know, I've been there, I've done that. I retired for a couple of years. I was just working with a AAA team here, working with some goalies and things. And this opportunity came around where I talked to Stu and I talked to Jim Price, who's our COO. And I really liked the concept, and I really liked that the vision that Stu Siegel has. And you know, I first came on board as a scout, and then, you know, it evolved, and now I'm involved in product development. And you know, it's something different. It's something challenging, and a lot of times I work outside of my comfort zone, and some of the things that I've not done as a coach or a scout, and it's been quite interesting, and I enjoy it.
Curious what junior hockey was like. I mean, we're going back now to the 60s. What was junior hockey like when you played, Phil?
Well, first of all, our equipment was a lot smaller.
That's true.
I watch these kids now, and, you know, I on the side, you know, I've been coaching goalies in Saginaw in the OHL. And I work with these kids a couple of times a week, and, you know, I watch that equipment that they wear, and I'm saying, wow, you know. We had to deal with the physical pain of getting hit in practice and occasionally in games a lot more than they do. I mean, I can count on one hand over 5 years the number of times that a goalie actually gets hurt with the puck anymore. So, I mean, that certainly is an advantage because you don't have to deal with that. We used to get hit with the puck in practice almost every day.
Yeah. And
you know, the other difference is that I never had a goalie coach until I spent 10 years in the NHL. So we were kind of learning on the job, watching the other goalies, you know, and really had nobody to talk to, you know, nobody to exchange ideas with. So, you know, that. It's one of the reasons why, you know, in the past, goalies took a long time to mature.
Right.
Remember in the old days, you'd say, well, a goalie doesn't reach his peak till he's 27, 28. Yep. And that's the reason, you know, we just had to learn on the job. And now these kids, you know, they come in and it takes them a couple of years and they're right there at the top of their game. And they've been learning and working with coaches and great training and hockey camps and everything else. So, and they're certainly more ready than we were.
They are. It's a wonderful product now. But players like yourself are the forerunners of everything that's there now in the CHL. On that, we'll let you go. Phil, thanks so much for stopping by today.
My pleasure.
There he is, Phil Mir, former NHL goaltender, former junior goaltender, played in the Q, played in the O, former coach. In the National Hockey League, and now he is the U.S. head scout for the International Scouting Service. You know, one of the names that really polarizes people, Sam, we'll finish up the podcast on this one. One of the names that really polarizes people is Lawson Crouse. And on the ISS hockey list, Crouse is in at number 4, just after Dylan Strome at number 3, and above players like Hanifin, Marner, Provorov, and Matthew Barzal. The first thing when you think of Lawson Crouse is size. He could walk into the NHL tomorrow. Is that perhaps, in your estimation, one of the reasons why he is ranked so high by ISS?
Well, I think size, right? I think size is starting to kind of make a resurgence. You know, when the rules were changed going back to the to the lockout back in 04, you know, everyone came back, and it's speed, and it's, you know, size doesn't matter, and it's skill. And I think we're seeing the game go through another evolution, if you will, going back to size. You know, and everyone talks about the Western Conference teams and how many cups they've won recently, and just watching the style in the Western Conference and the NHL compared to the Eastern Conference. So to get back to my point about Lawson Crouse, that's the one thing he possesses that you can't change, you can't teach. It's there. And so immediately when you have the size, that's the first thing that sticks out. Then you look at his ability to skate. You look at his ability to adapt to different roles. You know that if you watch him enough that he can score goals. And for me, one of the best things about Lawson Crouse is his self-awareness. And so when you package all of this together, you're looking at a guy, as you say, who can step right in, because he'll be so self-aware that he knows that if he plays in an NHL team next year, it's probably 7, 8, 9 minutes a night. Mm-hmm. That's going to be good enough for him. And he'll find a way to make those minutes effective until he evolves in his ability to think the game and play at that level of speed. And that's, to me, Jeff, what makes him as highly ranked as he is. Now, I guess the flip side to that, and I'll ask you this question, is some people may see a limit or a ceiling on his skill level when you look at the guys that, you know, at least where ISS has him, that are ranked below him. And maybe those are the things that might bump him down a little bit. Where do you see Crouse, and what do you think about those, you know, if there are skill limitations compared to those ranked lower than him on the list?
I've always liked Lawson Crouse, and I think that we really saw the best that Lawson Crouse can give when Sam Bennett arrived back with the Kingston Frontenacs. Big, powerful guy who can play a number of different roles as well. Like, let's not forget, the minute Sam Bennett shows up, back in Kingston, and at times he was playing on a line with Spencer Watson as well, and it was dynamic, one of the best lines for those weeks that they were together. But you go back to the World Junior Hockey Championships, and all of a sudden, you know, Lawson Crouse is playing a fourth-line shutdown role, and he's fine with it. He's a versatile guy, but I think the knock, because, you know, you're comparing him against, you know, the OHL scoring champion and Dylan Strome, a player like Mitch Marner, who shot the lights out in London. And I think a lot of people like to see big point production in junior hockey because they think that'll translate more to the NHL game, where you have the potential. Because if you haven't put up the points before, it's going to be awfully challenging to put those points up in the NHL. I like Lawson Crouse. I understand perhaps the limits offensively, but what I like about Crouse is this specifically. Even if he's not giving you point production, he's giving you something. He's killing a penalty. He's blocking a shot. He's a big body. He's working the defensive side of the puck. One of the knocks on some of the high-end skill players who may be smallish in stature but put up big points is if they're not giving you point production, and there's no guarantee at the NHL level that they will, if they're not giving you point production, are they giving you anything else? And there's a question mark for a lot of those players. But with Lawson Crouse, I think we can all definitely say, even if he's not giving you production points-wise, he is giving you something that contributes in the game.
Yeah, that's a great point, Jeff. That's really a good point. And at the end of the day, what you're trying to do is project National Hockey League players, not necessarily scoring champions, not necessarily Norris Trophy winners, but guys that are National Hockey League players that are going to play in the NHL, you know, for a long period of time. And that's sometimes the thing that gets forgotten. You know, yes, you might draft a higher skilled guy or a better ceiling guy or a guy who had greater points in his previous league to the NHL, but at the end of the day, what the projection scouts have to make and the decisions general managers have to make is, what is that guy going to do for me at the National Hockey League level? And you make a very good point there about Crouse.
All right, and before we wrap up, let's just a quick little tee up. We will be in, you will be in Quebec City, rather, for Game 3 between the Ramparts and the Oceanic. As we saw yesterday, 7-4 was the final score. Anthony Duclair was fantastic with two goals and one assist. Kurt Echegaray as well with the single and the two helpers. We have a Game 2 on Friday, and then Game 3 on television, CHL on Sportsnet, 3 o'clock Eastern. What do you expect the rest of this series, Sam, to look like?
It should be good, and you know, I'll use my history in calling games as a benchmark for that. And I'll take you back to 06. It was the Remparts and the Moncton Wildcats playing for the President's Cup. The championship series went six games. Moncton won it. Awesome series. I mean, two teams giving it. There was you know, piss and vinegar all over the place. There was coaches that didn't like each other. There was a lot of controversy there. There's all of that. Then I go to 07, and I look at the Vancouver Giants and Medicine Hat Tigers. Both knew because Vancouver was hosting that they were going to be in the MasterCard Memorial Cup. It was a seven-game series that ended in the fog in Medicine Hat Arena in what was maybe the best Western Hockey League final of all times. And again, those are two teams that knew they were going to be in. The next one after that would have been in 2008 when you had Belleville and Kitchener playing. Kitchener was the host. Again, a wonderful series played by those two teams. And so to think that moving forward into this series in 2015 with both Quebec and Rimouski being in, why would it be any different? In fact, there are some cases that you could make the point or make the argument, Jeff, that these series become even more important because of people wanting to go through the front door, and they're that close to getting through the front door. So I think it's going to be a marvelous series. I mean, interesting last night in Rimouski, moves away from Louis-Philippe Guindon, 4 minutes and 3 seconds into that, into the second period, which a guy who was really carrying the mail for him through that last series. And now maybe it's DeRoche who retakes the net there. So that's probably the most fascinating thing that I took out of game one.
Oh, he was looking like the best trade in the QMJ, and he's still very well maybe the best trade in the QMJHL, picking him up from Drummondville. Louis-Philippe Guindon, who has been fantastic through these playoffs. But you're right. You wonder if this is now DeRoche's ball to run with. When you look at this series, do we look at this and say, this is, you know, with all due respect to Zach Fucale, this is going to be the story of Quebec's offense against Rimouski's defense? Because that blue line, yes, they are mobile, but I look at them, Sam, and they're giants. And it's not just Samuel Morin. He may be the biggest, but this entire blue line is large.
Well, now that the Duke is back and the Duke is playing, you know, Anthony Duclair is playing up to his capabilities, there's no question that that offense is there. Etchegaray's been dynamite. You know, Kachev has chipped in, maybe not as consistently as they would have liked, but they're getting scoring up and down the lineup for
Adam
Quebec.
Ernie. Adam Ernie's done.
Adam Ernie, yep. Just fantastic with his goal scoring ability. So, you know, the offense is there, no question. And you know very well about Rimouski's defense and the size they have back there. They got a couple of guys who can produce points as well. And, you know, there's some leadership back there with Charles David Beaudoin. There are a lot of good elements to that hockey club. But, you know, when you look at Loiseau, you look at DeLuca up front, there's still a team that can put the puck in the net, maybe not quite as deep as to the manner in which Quebec can do it, but Rimouski still has the opportunity to score goals. I mean, they score four last night and still lose. So I think that's a very fair assessment to say it's going to be Quebec's offense against Rimouski's defense. But the score that we saw in game one, the 7-4 score, I think is going to be pretty indicative of what we're going to see throughout the course of the series.
Should be a great series. We look forward to these two teams in Quebec City end of this month at the MasterCard Memorial Cup. On behalf of Sam Cosentino and our producer, Matt Brown, Jeff Merrick signing off another edition of your favorite CHL podcast. This has been Junior. We will catch up with you again on Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock Eastern, Game 3 of Rimouski facing off against Quebec in the President's Cup Final. Talk to you then.